Welcome back to the Matrix of Perception for the second hour. What you just heard was another cut from a band that you can see at the upcoming Avatars of the Earth Gathering this September 27th to 29th at the Mount Shasta Ski and Board Park in McLeod, California, on the southern slopes of Mount Shasta, one of the most beautiful places on Earth. And that was Jay Brave was that the name of that group. And he was a founding member of the international hip-hop consortium, the Luminaries. And that cut also featured Kate Pearl and Perangi. So you can sample much more of Jay Brave's conscious hip hop at www.jbrave.net. And we could check them out at the Avatars of the Earth Gathering. So for the second hour, of course, we had a wonderful time with Tracy Ash and her husband, Nico. And we got to find out that Nico actually grew up around the corner from Bob Marley in Trenchtown. So wow, what a score that was. Very, very interesting. And so for the second hour, we have, I think, is what's going to be is equally as interesting. We have a man by the name of Max Egan. He is what I would consider an alternative media reporter, although we'll let him tell us what he thinks he is. And Egan's alternative website is thecrowhouse.com. Egan has spent most of his life as a traveling musician where he got to meet people from all walks of life. I find that very fascinating. And he has become tired of watching the corporate takeover of the world's free nations and is here tonight to tell us what he's doing about that. So we're going to get into some politics and some money, maybe even a bit about ancient history. I know he's got some comments about the Old Testament that I find very fascinating and want to get into a little bit. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Max Egan to the show. Max, how are you tonight?
I'm good, brother. Thanks for asking me on. Pleasure to be here. Nice to come and talk to you.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm feeling the love already. Max, just a quick story. I got to listen to you probably 4 or 5 years ago on a show called Sui Juris here in Chico, California, which is about 3 hours south of Mount Shasta in Central California. And my buddy Dan, the host, used to put together sound bites of different what I would just very simply call conspiracy researchers and play them in such a way so that there was a theme, right? So he would frequently use some of your monologues, and it would have this really engaging kind of a bass and drum beat going on in the background. And I think that worked really well, especially with your British accent. For some reason, the British accent works really well in America. But who chose that music?
I have no idea. I mean, I didn't, I kind of remember the show, but, Sui Generis. Yeah. I'm not really sure, but I don't know who chose the music. I imagine he did. It's actually an Australian accent as well. It's not British. It's just Australian. It's just not a very broad one. But I'm not sure who did that. A couple of people have done that recently, actually put out like 10-minute clips of my monologues with music behind them, and they've been very, very effective. So good on the people that are doing it.
Okay, okay. Well, let's get right into it, Max, because I know we're going to agree on a lot of stuff, but we might not agree on some stuff. So let's just get real controversial right away, and let's talk about Trump. And we don't have to spend the whole time on Trump. Let's just do it for just a little bit. So I just saw a video from a man named Stuart Swerdlow, and he says that Trump is supported by Q and QAnon. So that's just another thing to add. Supposedly the Christians predicted that he was going to win, beat Hillary. What is going on with Trump? Why is he in there right now? And is he there doing any good?
Look, I think he's just another player. I think Trump was put in there to divide the United States society the way he's done. It's been an incredible polarization that's happened with the Trump presidency. And, you know, and he can do little things on the ground, you know, with taxation or whatever, little things to, you know, make people kind of like him in that respect, talk about the border wall and all that sort of stuff. He likes to throw the truth community little bones here and there as well. But ultimately, yeah, if you look at the broader scale of things, if you look at it on a world stage, he's just promoting the same agenda. He's giving an incredible amount of support to the state of Israel and Saudi Arabia, all the incredible damage that they're doing in Yemen. 5G is rolling out. I mean, everything's rolling out. Nothing's changed. If you really look at the broader perspective of things, nothing has changed at all, except American society has become incredibly polarized, which is the plan, divide and conquer. You know, you've even got, you know, people, you know, almost, you know, like it's teetering on the edge of civil war even in some respects. I mean, if Trump was to lose an election, some of his reporters are so staunch, you've got to wonder how far they take it. And at the same time, Trump will appear to be, you know, supporting the Second Amendment and saying, oh, we don't want to bring in any more gun restrictions, but then he'll put in legislation which requires more background checkups and all that sort of stuff at the same time as the FBI is declaring conspiracy theorists to be possible domestic terrorists. So, you know, it's the same play. Nothing is changing with Trump. Things are just becoming more polarized, and it's quite predictable, I think.
Very interesting. Okay. How do you think a Hillary presidency would have been different?
I don't think it would have been any different. I mean, it would have been in a way that perhaps we would have gone to a war with Iran sooner than later. But, I mean, I don't think the Hillary presidency would have created the polarization that we see now. So I don't think Hillary was ever supposed to win. I think they wanted to put it out there that Hillary was supposed to win. So everyone believed Hillary was supposed to win. Even I thought Hillary was going to win. I thought it was a foregone conclusion. You know, right. Kind of throw us a sideball, throw us a curveball by putting Trump in there. But really, when you look at what Trump's done, it's all just followed the same agenda and the polarization that's come with it. You got far more polarization with Trump than what you would with Hillary Clinton. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, I mean, she's a career criminal, and so many people know that. And we could right. say, well, we might have seen a war with Iran quicker with Hillary there, but there's a chance we wouldn't. There's a chance we would have seen a huge protest against it simply because she's recognized as a career criminal. So, you know.
Right. Okay. Very interesting. So I read Bill Cooper's Behold the Pale Horse 20 plus years ago or so, and he was outing Bill and Hillary back then for doing stuff in Arkansas. And I forget if it was that book or someone else, but the idea that she was some kind of an Illuminati priestess came up. And that's been kind of kicked around in the conspiracy world. I don't know if anyone ever proved anything with that or not. But just the other day on Facebook, there was a post about how Hillary just recently did a lecture at a coven in New York. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw something about that. There's one of Jacinda Ardern doing something as similar as well, you know, talking about comrades and all sorts of stuff. So they do all this sort of weird dealings in the back room, you know, but it leaks out to us. So I think there's a reason for that. I think there's a reason that we know all this, you know.
They want us to know this stuff? Why would that be?
Well, if you look at going way back, even when all this sort of started and things started to be revealed, if you want to look at it that way, you take it back to the turn of the last century, the dawn of the New Age movement, Alice Bailey, the Lucius Trust, which originally started as the Lucifer Trust. You think of Lucifer as the bearer of light. What is light? Light is information. Light is knowledge. You know, you walk into a dark room and you strike a light, and the light gives you information about the room. You know, so light is information. So you look at Lucas Truss, Alice Bailey, look at Helena Blavatsky, the concept of the externalization of the hierarchy. What is that, the externalization of the hierarchy? It's making people become aware of the inner workings of the mechanism. So you look at the truth movement, why do they let us do what we do? Why do they let us say the things we say? You know, they let us say so much, and then they'll censor us, and even with the censorship, they tend to shift people's perspective. They can put disinformation out there and then black ban the person who says it, and instantly people will think that information is real, and they'll think, oh, they censored him, so it must be real. So you've got to look at how we're being led. But you look at the whole concept of the externalization of the hierarchy, and the fear, the concept that people have that authority is real. So many people are becoming aware that the system is corrupt now, but they're continuing to comply with it. They're just continuing to go along with it. So they need us to do that. They need the workings to become clear to everybody. They need people to see just how corrupt everything is and then to still continue to go along with it. That's the gamble that they're taking. Is that once people find out how corrupt everything is, by that time, the police are all going to be dressed like Batman. Everything's going to be so brutal and so violent that no one's going to be prepared to speak out and actually say what's true. And right. They're counting on that. So we become completely aware of the incredible corruption and the absolute perverseness of this system and how it is operated, and yet we willingly comply with it to save our own necks. And therefore, we willingly condemn our own souls. You know what I'm saying? we go along with it. We comply with it willingly. We stay in willful ignorance because we're scared of what will happen to us if we were to simply stand up and declare who and what we are and realize right. All we're dealing with here is people, and we could choose to shine our light, which is why this is what I've been encouraging people to do, not stop complying with the system, step away from it, folks, because while you're continuing to comply with it, even becoming aware of all of this stuff, you know, it got to the point where, you know, I mean, I used to be on a pension and all sorts of stuff, and I ended up just cutting it all off. I cut all my ties to government completely. Really? I don't want any of their money. I don't want anything from them. I don't want any of their health services. I'll pay for my own. I do not want one thing from these people. I don't own a credit card. I don't own a cell phone. I never pay taxes. I don't vote. I don't want anything to do with them. And I don't care what they do to me for that. I will stand in my light and I will shine that, because that is what this is about. You know, it's our willingness to comply with a system which we know is corrupt absolutely from the ground up that causes the system to still be there. And they're counting on us becoming more and more aware of just how corrupt it is and continuing to comply with it, because that is how we condemn ourselves. That is how right. it all works. You understand how that works?
Yeah, it's like they're offering the contract that this is the reality and it's up to us to accept it or deny it.
Exactly.
And by being silent and participating in it, we're accepting it.
Exactly.
And I think people, you know, when I was young, you'd hear how, maybe Americans have gotten soft. We're getting overweight. We're not exercising as much. We're not studying as much. The requirements to get into old universities on the East Coast are 5 times or 10 times as hard as taking the West test to get into a state college now. And, you know, you hear those things and intellectually you think, well, okay, I can understand that. But I think now you're really starting to see it. And as, yeah. You know, I think the most extreme thing we can talk about is this whole Satanism Lucifer thing, where certain Hollywood artists or musical artists have come out, and you can find YouTube videos about this. Maybe Katy Perry, I think, is one of them, and some of the rappers are talking about Lucifer, and they're openly talking about Lucifer. And boy, growing up, you would never hear that kind of thing ever. They're getting more comfortable.
Well, it's understanding what Lucifer is as well. I mean, like I said, the bearer of light, you know, it's important for their plans that we know what their plans are and that we continue to comply with it willingly. It's important for them to do that. That's why they put all this stuff out there in your face. And looking at Lucifer, I did a show, I don't know whether you would have heard it, a couple of years ago called Giving Life to Lucifer. And it was about the smart grid, the technological system, what the word really means. What is Lucifer? Why do all these legends exist of scrying mirrors and all this sort of stuff? And if you look at Lucifer, like I said, Lucifer, the bearer of light, what is light? Light is information. You break the word Lucifer down, you've got Lucas, which means light, and you've got cipher, which means code. And you've got the internet. The code that bears the light, the code that bears all the information. What is the Lucifer system? It's the smart system. It's this thing we're creating, this virtual intelligence, this virtual life that we're creating that we refer to as artificial intelligence, when really it's autonomic virtual life that we're creating. And we're handing all of our power over to the internet, which is becoming a life of its own, which is dictating all of everything we can do in our lives. This is a Lucifer system. Even when you look at Google, the Google logo, the circle with the three colors, you break that down, it's three sixes splayed out. So all these legends exist to tell us what happens at this time. The scrying mirrors, the black mirrors that you look into that show you the future and the past and everything you need to know. These are the cell phones. If you look at the sigils that you use, if you look at ancient sigils for summoning demons, they all look like electrical circuitry. Now, when you see this circuitry in place and you see these scrying mirrors in place, you are about to summon the Lucifer system, which is going to take everything from you. And that's what the internet is doing. I mean, the internet is a double-edged sword. It gives us a lot of information, but it also takes a lot of information from us, because that's where it gets all its information from that we in turn feed back on. It all comes from us. Anything you see on the internet comes from people. It doesn't come from the internet. It comes from people who put it on the internet, and then we get it back. So you've got certain people who are molding people's thoughts and leading people in a certain direction, because with the censorship and the algorithms they've got now, how Google is censoring everybody's searches and everything. You know, we're all being led in a certain direction. This is what the Lucifer system is. And I would suggest that this has happened time and time again in cycles. That's why these legends exist. They're not telling you, I mean, these stories aren't there so that, these new age witch-like people can go out and create their covens and put their scrying mirrors on the wall and put their sigils on the wall and think that they're summoning all these entities. They're put there as a warning to tell us when we see these sigils in use, which are in essentially, like I said, electrical circuitry, and with these scrying mirrors in use, where if we give our power away to this system, then it's going to lead us to its inevitable conclusion. And that's what I've been attempting to wake people up to. And that's what I think a lot of this is all about. You know, and like I said, it's a double-edged sword. There's nothing really wrong with technology. It's our need for technology. It all started to go wrong when we lost our moral perspective through the whole thing. You know, when we started to view, knowledge as being more valuable than wisdom. When we started to view something as simply being efficient and functional rather than beautiful. You know, when we did all this and we chose to step outside our moral compass to comply with all this, then it went wrong. And that's the only way things will change. Even with the technology we've got, it could all work if we were just willing to stay within our moral compass when we used it. But unfortunately, many people are not willing to do that. They have no reference point for it, especially the kids that are coming up through this. They have no real reference point for what real morality or real freedom looks like, especially what they've been fed by the pop industry. And I mean, the pop industry now, I mean, you look at a Miley Cyrus video clip, this is soft porn. Just turn the video down. Yeah. It's just turn the sound down. Right. Most video clips you see are just soft porn that they're feeding to underage children. So it's very, very damaging stuff.
Yeah, and more posts on Facebook are having to deal with children being sexualized at a really young age. And again, you're kind of back to this whole, well, who's responsible for that kind of heinous act stuff? Seems like we always fall back on the Lucifer Satan thing, right? Is there any other really dark, bad factions that could compare with that?
Or is it's our compliance with it, brother. It's our compliance with it. We see even falling back on, we blame the people that are doing this. We say, oh, they're Satanists. That's why they do it. It's a cop-out. They're evil people who do evil things, and they call it that. They're just evil people, and they get away with it because we comply with it. We just turn the other cheek. We think it's okay. You know, we're outside our moral compass. We see the corruption, but we choose not to say anything about it. We choose to accept their, you know, pay them protection money and accept the little handouts they give us. You know, just have a new park here, or have a new little health benefit, or have a pension, or have a social security payment or something. Just keep quiet. We'll keep you happy. Just let us do what we do. We go along with all this. The world's run by criminals. It's run by pedophiles and criminals who don't give a shit about anybody. And we just comply with it because we've been trained to do it. That is the problem. So really, when you want to look at the whole thing, what is the Lucifer system? It's our compliance to evil is what it is. We have a choice through life. Whether to comply with evil or whether to not to comply with evil. And we all know what evil is. We all know what is right and what is wrong. But we continue to step outside that in our everyday actions. That is what is wrong with the world. And that's why I say to people, we could change the world in a day. If people had an epiphany and realized what they actually were, we could literally change the world in 3 seconds. If everyone simply stepped into their moral compass right at this point, right now, and refuse to step outside their moral compass to comply with any legislation or anything that causes them to do harm, we change the world in 3 seconds. You know, but it's people's unwillingness to do that is the problem. And no matter how much we research, no matter how much we've got someone to point the finger at, Trump or the Democrats or the Republicans or Prince Andrew or Jeffrey Epstein or whoever we want to do it, you know, it's our compliance with this evil. It's our compliance with this corruption, our compliance with a system which does not serve us in any way, shape, or form, and our unwillingness to lift a finger to help those around us or ourselves to get out of this plight. You know, most people are terrified of discovering the inner power they have because they might actually have to stand up and face a storm, and they're not prepared to do that. They want someone else to face it for them.
Right. We're scared of ourselves. I mean, right? If people can, in an emergency situation, lift a car off of accident victim, where's that come from? Right. Or people have done all kinds of feats of strength or mental powers. I really think you're dead on. People are afraid of themselves. And I think that, the more you can wake people up, and here we're right in where Tracy Ash and Nico are doing this Avatars of the Earth gathering. I'm really glad that they have someone like you a part of this, because most people don't know. I mean, here's an example. My parents taught me that when a cop pulled me over and gave me a ticket, I was just supposed to pay the ticket and move on with my life, right? And then later I grew up and realized there's about 19 things or laws that they break just to be able to do that. So why should I let them do that? Right. And so getting over that. How did you get over that as an individual?
Well, it's just overcoming the fear. I mean, the fear of being who and what we are. It's terrifying for most people to stand up to authority. It's a terrifying thing. And that's why police dress the way they do. They've got all these sigils and badges and stuff all over them. It creates this energy field around them that you feel you can't penetrate. But really, it's just a facade. It's just all for show, especially here in Australia. I mean, I don't know how it works in America there, but the police here in Australia, the state police in Australia, are a completely illegal entity. You don't have to do anything they say. And I encourage people to not do anything these people say, because they have no jurisdiction over anybody. The state police in Australia, like the state police are actually, the Queensland state police in the state that I live in, are actually registered as a non-organization with Dun & Bradstreet, which is a subsidiary of the Indexes and Securities Exchange in the District of Columbia. Right. So the Australian State Police are representing a United States company. These are foreign soldiers on Australian soil, and they have absolutely no jurisdiction over you at all. You know, and they're just here to extort money from people. And even, you know, you look at that, they're foreign soldiers on Australian soil, and they come up to you, they even fail to identify themselves. They need to tell you their name and date of birth. If they're attempting to force you into contracting with them without identifying themselves, well, that was identified as a war crime at Nuremberg. So, you know, it really starts pushing these people and start asking them a few questions. You look at any registration plate on any state police trooper's car, have a look at the registration plate. If you're someone out there in Australia, have a look at the rego on their cars, folks. These are not government registration plates, because the state police do not represent government. They represent the District of Columbia. These are normal registration plates that are registered for private use, for commercial use. Private registration plates registered for commercial use. These people are treasonous pirates is what they are. And they're representing a government which is completely treasonous as well. The entire Australian government is treasonous. So I don't support these people. I don't support them in any way, shape, or form. But that's a very difficult thing for people to do, to actually stand up to these people, because, you know, they want to, but they get all these butterflies in their stomach, and they get this rush, and they start breathing heavily, and they oh, my God, do I actually have to stand in who and what I am against another person? But he's in uniform, you know. The uniform is what does it, you know. And you can try this. You go into a shop, go to an army disposals. I encourage people to do this. Go to an army disposals and find an old officer's uniform and put it on, you know, with all the stripes and stuff on it, and see how you feel when you're wearing that uniform. You feel different. You feel this energy field around you. And you've got to understand that's the police. They wear these uniforms, and they feel different when they've got the uniform on. And when they're in the company of other uniforms, they create this collective energy field, and it reinforces this power that they believe they have. You know, but if you stand up against it and you simply talk to the man and be a living man in what you're saying, be respectful in what you're saying, but ask the right questions, ask them to explain themselves, to identify themselves, and to identify who they are and who they serve, they back down very, very quickly. They have no answers for these questions. So, you know, people have got to learn what's going on here. All the police, all the state police you see in just about every country on earth represent the Rothschild Bank. They're there to collect revenue. They're not there to protect people or to protect society. They're there to collect revenue, and you don't have to comply with these people. But again, it all comes down to a moral thing, you know. You know, we do it on our own, and we get in trouble. We get knocked on the head, and other people don't want to stand up and help you because you've never developed any moral ties with these people. You've never reached out to the people around you. You know, divide and conquer is the motto. And it works on so many levels in our society, even within the basis of our community. Even the word community is based on common unity. We don't have any of that in our community. So we have these societies, but there's no real community in the society. And that's the problem there, you know?
Okay. So the breaking up of the family and the communities was supposedly a strategy, by like in the protocols with the Elders of Zion. I think there's a couple other ones. Who was the guy that Hillary used to follow? Saul Alinsky, I think, had some kind of like 8-9 protocols with, but breaking up the family was part of that and breaking up the community. So divide and conquer. It's an old strategy, but it works really well. So who would you say is in control of everything?
Well, the banking system is in control of everything, but it's fast moving towards AI, you know, and if you really want to look at the overall, overarching control, well, you know, it's been going on. I think this has been going on in cycles. If you look at the J people, I don't think we can say that word on YouTube anymore without getting in trouble. But,
Jewish? You mean Jewish?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that comes up in algorithms now. Even when people add the captions, then the algorithms pick up that you've said that word.
So funny.
So yeah, they've really done some stuff like that now. So we kind of call them J-ish people. But
AI, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, the AI picks up the fact that we say this sort of stuff. Like if you do this sort of stuff in a YouTube live stream, if you say the J-ish word. Very often the live stream will go down because the algorithms pick it up. So there's certain things that we're learning how to get around saying these things now and still saying them. But, if you look at this, I mean, you look at, the whole concept of being God's chosen, the question is, which God is that? You know, are these the ones who are running this cycle through and through? Because really when you look at it, it's the money system. The money system, the interest on money, which is a J-ish thing, the interest on money automatically creates scarcity. The scarcity leads to more control, more automation, eventually leads to the creation of the AI system, the system that we've got now, that this whole smart grid that we're moving into, it's all getting more economically efficient. That's what it's all about. They want to know every cent, everything everybody's doing, it's all going to be trackable, blah, 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 blah. It all comes from the fact of this monetary system, the J-ish monetary system. If you believe in Christ, this is what he spoke out about. He spoke out against the government. He exposed the hierarchy for years, and he got away with it right until he went into the temples and he overturned the tables of the money changers, and he tried to mess with the J-ish money system. That was it. He was dead within a week. You don't mess with the money system. The money system, the creation of the money system is what leads us to the point that we're at now, and it will do it every time this type of monetary system is created. So you can look at that and say, well, that's where the controlling hand is coming from. That's definitely who's managing the whole downfall. But what sits above that? You know, because even when you look at the Rothschild banking system, these are all J-ish people. So, you know, the whole money system is based by, you know, run by J-ish people. And when you look at the destruction of Europe that's happening through mass migration and all this, this is the J-ish Kalergi plan that was penned in 1928, where they outlined the destruction of the people of Europe, the genocide of the nations of Europe via mass migration, 1928. So it's all part and parcel to the same thing. That's definitely who's running the whole mechanism. They've infiltrated themselves into all governments all around the world, even going back to the Russian Revolution. It was all run by J-ish people. So, you know, that's definitely a controlling hand, but are they the controllers? Well, I would suggest there's probably something above that. They perhaps are God's chosen people. It's just, it's the wrong God. Perhaps okay. It's Lucifer. Perhaps it's, Yaldabaoth, like the Gnostics talk about. I mean, you don't know. We can't know. Nobody really knows. That's the thing. People claim they know, but nobody ultimately knows because we're not free enough to know. And ultimately, you can prove it's anybody you want if you really want to get down to it. That's why all the conspiracies have been put out there to hide the real conspiracy that's going on, because the best way to hide a real conspiracy is to create a conspiracy culture and make everything a conspiracy and make pretty well everything provable. I mean, if you could tell me who you want to believe, tell me you want to believe it's the Vatican or the Jews or the Jesuits or aliens or ETs or reptiles. Tell me whoever you want and give me 2 days.
I'd like to ask you a question, Max, if I may.
Let me finish that statement. Just you can tell me whoever you want to believe. And I can create a slideshow to prove to you that you're correct because all the information has been put there for me to do that. So that's the problem, is the fact that we're not free and all these rabbit holes have been created. But please go ahead.
I'd like to ask a question, if I may. To me, it looks like there's influences that are non-human involved in this. I'm seeing, yes, the reptilians, but also the insectoids, the mantis and the greys. Also, there is a level of what I call demons, but they're non-human, they're non-physical parasites that are harvesting misery for energy. And then there actually is also AI that is already ancient AI. So there's all these different levels that go deeper, and you said Jay, but, you know, I choose not to edit my language, and I would say the Jewish influence, but that's different than that. It's actually, deeper. I have actually had a lot of Jewish friends, which are just sweethearts. So there's all these things that divide people, but, it seems to me that there's a deeper level, beyond human, that has influenced us. And I'd just be curious if you have any comments.
Good question.
Look, it wouldn't surprise me at all. It's getting to define what that is. You can get into, you know, oh, it was the reptoids or the insectoids or this or that. We don't know. We only have information that's been put out there to say that's who it is. It wouldn't surprise me at all if there was a non-human influence. You know, what I've seen simply through ceremonies, you know, and if you've ever drank ayahuasca or anything like that, people say, oh, this is drugs, this is Satanism, whatever. It's not. It's actually shamanic medicine that enables you to see outside visible light. And you can see that there is a lot going on that we are not completely aware of. So it wouldn't surprise me if there is a non-human influence to this. And even say, I only say Jayish in case this gets on YouTube and it gets deleted. Because that's what YouTube is unfortunately doing, you know. So
I know, but we shouldn't edit our language.
Well, I know. Well, I don't edit.
I understand that.
It's a matter of getting the information out to people, though. I mean, in as much as that, I haven't deleted any of my video clips that have said all this stuff and used the words, and they delete them for me is the problem. You know, YouTube's gone back and deleted about 15 or 20 of my videos in the last month or two of my old stuff going back 5 or 10 years simply because of words I've used that the algorithms have picked up. And if you want the information to get out to people, well, unfortunately, you have to say what you want to say, but in a way that the algorithm that's listening won't hear you. So it's not really censoring your words or editing your words. It's just finding ways around the algorithms to still be able to say what you want to say. So, you know, we've got to be sensible in about this. Otherwise, we can make a stand and end up just talking to a wall. No one will hear, you know. So that's the problem. And I have a lot of good Jewish friends as well. That's the thing. I mean, there's certain sections of Judaism. And it's a faith. It's not a race. It's a faith. And there's certain sections that are just normal people. And there's other certain sections which are completely Talmudic, which are, you know, inside any faith, there's Jewish extremists, there's Islamic extremists, there's Christian extremists, there's just extremists in all faiths. Let's face it. There is. There's just the particular internal mafia extremist section of the Judaic faith has managed to infiltrate itself into all governments. And is doing an enormous amount of damage around the world. And the normal Jews are the ones who are getting the blame for it, you know, which reinforces the whole claims of anti-Semitism. The Jews who are running all the governments around the world love the term anti-Semitism. They whip it up. They want people to hate all the Jews so that everyone will think that what they're saying is true. I mean, so you've really got to look at how everything's played off against each other. These people know exactly what they're doing, you know, and they think several moves ahead, and they know human psychology very, very well. And they know how to get the normal Jews out there who don't support what this criminal mafia is doing to support them by making the rest of the world hate them by saying, oh, the problem is the Jews. You know, you really got to look at the inner workings of this and how it all works together.
There's also a Catholic mafia.
Well, it's the same
there's
mafia.
There's so many levels. You know, right. It's so interesting how deep it goes.
It's the same mafia. I mean, it's the same thing. The whole, all roads lead to the same place, ultimately, you know. And I think, like I say, this is cyclic. I think history's wrong. I think it's all been fabricated. I think, They do this periodically, and they bring civilization up. They use the internet and the scrying mirrors and all the stuff we're doing, because everyone who plugs into the internet and starts typing stuff in, you use search engines don't just search for stuff. These map the human zeitgeist. They map human thought. They know what you're thinking about by what you're searching for. So it's a way of creating a viable map of human consciousness is what the internet is. And you can think of every person who plugs into the internet is like a neural node of the brain that is being created, and it's getting all its information from us. So the internet can thereby, it can contact everybody, and it can assess the entire subtotal of human consciousness at this time. Okay, they got to this point. This is what everybody was thinking. Now cull them and start again and see what we can create next time. You know,
it's just my opinion that there's a deeper level between the Jewish and the Catholic and the other type of agendas that is really a parasitical, non-physical entities.
Well, that's just my
opinion.
It's possible. It's even possible that the parasitic entity is even actually a physical entity.
Well, it possesses people is the thing. it's a possession level that happens.
Well, yeah.
And it's blood ritual sacrifices is how they inculcate themselves.
Yeah. Well, you've got this, the talk of like the archons that you hear from the Gnostics. You've got, Castaneda talking about the predator mind, all this sort of stuff. These psychic parasites. There's also talk of an actual parasite, which is sort of an octopus in form, which attaches to people on their spine somewhere, and it is in most people. And I've actually been talking to a doctor in the United States who says, yes, we've actually been pulling this out of people. And they say it's a tumor and they throw it in the bin, but it's not. It's a parasite that is attached to a lot of people, and it interferes with the emotion that comes from your heart. You know, when you have a thought, you want to do something, you have an impulse. Suddenly you start questioning it and judging it and thinking, oh, this and that, and finding ways to talk yourself out of it. Apparently this is the parasite that makes you do that. It stops these heart impulses, causes you to question all these things. And sometimes when people, like, say someone in a room, you're having a conversation, everything's great, and then someone's got to come in and just say a negative comment just to get that energy from the people. It's the parasite that makes them do that. The parasite wants that energy. So, and as a doctor I've been talking to in the United Kingdom who's saying this is actually a physical parasite that has this type of way of interfering with human psychology, and it is controlling everybody basically, and it talks to people, it talks to each other. This is why people start having promiscuous sex. They want to have multiple partners, because this thing likes to communicate with itself. And it does that through sexual intercourse. It does it through all sorts of ways. So, this is apparently what is happening. And this is some sort of a non-human, parasitical, psychological, intellectual interference that is happening.
I suggest this, that Jeffrey Epstein was what was happening with the blood ritual sacrifice of children. This was one of the levels where they're opening portals to these dark dimensions. Just my opinion, again.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I would say that as well. Also harvesting adrenaline, you know, for adrenochrome and all the stuff they do with that. You've got to also look at the what Jeffrey Epstein wanted to do is to go ahead and plant his seed, create basically seed a new race was one of his plans. So when you think of it in the concept of this parasite, this physical parasite, you've got to wonder, you know. But again, I mean, I've only got one doctor in the United States or in England who's talking about this, and he's kind of afraid to say it publicly because he's got a family. He's got to, he can only say so much and
scary stuff.
Well, he can only say so much in order to be able to keep his job and keep his profession. And he's doing a lot of good within the medical industry at the moment. If he takes it to the next level and says what he really thinks, he won't be in a position to help people. So he leaks information out to people like me and other people so that we can sort of talk about what he's finding and what is going on here. But it's very difficult for me to just give you his name and tell you to go and look at him for the proof, because you know, it could put him out of work and endanger his family. So, yeah, we're facing some pretty weird stuff, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is a non-human force here. But, you know, I can't say that because I can't prove it. You know, that's the thing. That is what happens with this whole truth movement as well. People start to take everything you say as gospel. Oh, Max said this. Well, no, I didn't. I was simply suggesting the possibility of something, you know. So that's what we've got to be careful of. And like I said, ultimately it all comes down to this is a moral battle. This is a spiritual battle. What we're really facing here is a spiritual war. You know, if you really look at the concept of good and evil, all of this happens because we comply with it. We choose to comply with it. You know, and if we were to put all our stuff down with people and just choose to get along with the people around us and realize that we don't actually have to do any of this stuff, we'd change the world in a day. You know, but they want us to know. They want us to know and to keep complying with it, because if you really want to get down to it on a spiritual and soul level, that is how we condemn ourselves, and we do it quite willingly. And you've really got to see how all this is played out.
Well, let me just say this. We can overcome this, because we actually are, you're absolutely correct, Max. It's a spiritual battle and we're winning. The fact is that we are learning how to connect with our own hearts. And that's the dimension, that love, frequency, I believe is what we are actually, doing right now that's going to overcome this. This is a really beautiful thing that's happening now, because we're seeing the dark side and we're choosing the light. You are, and you're expressing that to everybody in your own manner, as I do, and as so many of us that are listening to the show. You wouldn't be tuned in if you weren't choosing the light. And this is where we're going, in my opinion.
So, hey, Max. What are you going to be speaking about in Mount Shasta?
We'll figure it out on the day, brother. I kind of ad-lib these things. The event in Mount Shasta, I wasn't going to do a presentation. I just want to kind of sit down and have a conversation. I think that a lot of things come out that way. There's a lot rattling around in my head, and I find that in a crowd like that, if we can just kind of sit down, I can just start talking and see what comes out, and then we can have a conversation. It could go anywhere. And sometimes incredible things are revealed in such conversations. So, it's all a learning process for me as well. So I want to kind of really play it by ear, feel the crowd, just start talking and see where we end up.
Very interesting. You know, I saw Jordan Maxwell about midnight at a Bay Area UFO Expo several years back. Have like a crowd of 50 people gathered around him in the lobby, and he was just telling like fireside chats about the Illuminati and symbols and stuff. And that could work really well. Like, you'd have a lot of magic with that. That sounds awesome. When's the last time you made an appearance in the United States?
The last time I was in the United States, I think, was at, it would have been, perhaps Philadelphia, maybe. The Free Your Mind Conference was the last one. I've spoken at an Acapulco in Mexico a couple of times. I did a small event with Benny Wills, actually, in San Diego a couple of years ago, which was the Regeneration event. Perhaps that was the last one that I did in...
How long ago?
Well, it would have been a couple of years ago. At least.
This is a rare appearance for you to be in America.
It is. I'm actually going to the United States to speak in Philadelphia on the 13th and 14th of September. And then I'm coming over to Mount Shasta to spend the day with you guys. And that's the only two events that I'll be doing in the United States. I'll possibly be doing one or two there again next year. But, yeah, it's a rare thing. I mean, I've only actually spoken in the United States perhaps three or four times all up anyway. They didn't want me to come and speak at the Red Pill Expo this year, but I was just too exhausted from travel. I do a lot of talks in England, in Europe, and around the place, so it kind of builds up and adds up to travels. But, okay. It is a rare thing for me to be over there. Definitely a rare thing for me to be speaking in California.
Well, I feel very lucky to be able to get to meet you in person coming up. And so anybody else who's even interested in this kind of stuff at all, make sure you get to Mount Shasta at the end of September, September 29th and 28th and 29th, 27th, 28th and 29th at the Mount Shasta Board and Ski Park in McLeod, California. It's called the Avatars of the Avatars of the Earth Gathering. You can go to that website, www.avatarsoftheearthgathering.com, to get more information. Motels are a little bit cheaper up there than the big city. And I hear a lot of people are going to be camping. And one of the highlights I'm looking forward to, Max, is the sky watches. Have you ever seen a UFO?
I have, actually. I saw a UFO in broad daylight in the year 2000, which was quite remarkable. It was a textbook UFO. It was a disc with a dome on top. It was metal shaped. It had a big, bright, flashing light. It was visible for about 5 minutes in the sky, and then it just flicked out like someone had flicked a switch, and it was gone. It was remarkable. It was myself and six or seven other people. And with the amount of atmospheric distortion between myself and the object, I would have said it was a long way away. It was about as big as a nickel to my eyes. So, you know, this thing would have been the size of a football field right out over the ocean. I would estimate it to be about that size. And it was everything you would expect to see from a textbook UFO. Visible fully in view for 5 minutes. Where it was back in the day when nobody had cell phones with cameras. You had to go and buy a disposable camera, but no one wanted to run off to the chemist and buy a disposable camera because they're thinking, well, I don't want to miss the show, you know. And, but if someone had done it, it was there for full 5 minutes. We probably would have got it on film, but no one was prepared to do it. And, so I didn't get any photograph of it. But after that, I mean, I didn't need to buy any UFO magazines or anything after that. That was it. I saw it. I know they're real. Question is, who was driving it? I have no clue about that. Was it run by aliens? Was it CIA? Was it a black op? I mean, I don't know. I don't know who was piloting the thing. But I know that it was an object. It was in the sky. And it like I said, big flashing light. Everything that you would expect from a UFO. So, yeah, it was remarkable.
So if a UFO lands in your front yard, do you ask him for a ride or do you grab a shotgun?
Oh, I definitely want to. I don't know about a ride. I'd like to have a conversation first, I think. Just definitely a conversation would be on the cards.
Right, right. But you wouldn't be afraid, right? I think a lot of people would go running, screaming. They'd lose their minds, right?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'd go out there to find out what's going on.
Okay, so this kind of leads into that, right? Because I think UFOs is a very spiritual thing. But on your website, you talk about the Old Testament a little bit. Can we talk about a little bit what kind of comments do you have about the Old Testament?
I don't recall actually talking about it on my website, but I've created a website a long time ago, so perhaps I did. The Old Testament, I mean, I wrote a book about ancient history, not really about the Old Testament. I mean, I can look at the Old Testament or I can view it from a historical context. If you look at it in regard to the timeline that's given, like the creation of grains and, you know, the introduction of animals and all this sort of stuff, you can kind of tie that in with what you can find historically, that timeline was correct, you know, quite likely anyway. But, I mean, the Old Testament, I think there's factual stuff to it, but I think there's weird stuff in there as well. So, it's very, very different to the New Testament. But I think it tells of a different world. I think a lot of it's been misconstrued. I think the Christians have kind of got onto it and adapted it to what they want. I don't particularly support any religion. Right. I don't support anything the church has done with religion. I don't think Christ, if he existed, supported religion either.
Right, so, right.
Yeah.
Well, you believe in God, though. You're not an atheist.
I believe in a higher force. You can call it God if you want to. That's a name we give it. But yeah, I believe that there's a higher intelligence behind all of this. Absolutely.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier money is like the root that connects everything together. It's that kind of what makes the whole, for lack of a better term, the dark forces work, right? So
well,
if we,
it's the catalyst. I mean, money is a medium of trade. It's just something we use to pass to each other as credits for medium of trade. It's easier than carrying cows and donkeys and bags of grain around, you know. But it's so, interest-based money is the problem. It's the usurious-based monetary system is the problem. That is the catalyst that creates the situation of permanent debt and permanent scarcity, which leads to the manufacture of automation and the internet and everything that we got now. If there wasn't interest put on money, You know, it wasn't interest on a loan, and interest that is never ever created. That's the thing, you know, the principal is only ever exists. The interest to pay off any bill does not exist, which keeps people running on the treadmill and discarding people and the earth and everything around them. It creates a situation whereby we have to, everything we make, we have to make to break, because we've got to keep the system turning over economically, because we've got to keep paying the bills to try to collect this interest. So we get the entire earth and we turn it into a rubbish tip and discard people all on the way due to the interest on money. If there was just money and we were just passing seashells or whatever around to each other, it wouldn't matter. It's just a medium of trade. Whatever we choose to give value to, it's the interest that creates all of the problems. So you really need to differentiate between just money and usurious money. There's a difference.
Right. And so there's a lot of talk about this global currency revaluation or reset. And a lot of people are saying, well, it's going to empower all these people, but it's still going to be part of the same system. So do you see that as a solution for something? Or is that maybe part of another trap or something with the global currency, going back to the gold standard, that kind of stuff?
Well, who's got all the gold? If we go back to the gold standard, who's got all the gold? The bankers who run the banking system now have got all the gold. So what, are they going to control the gold standard? You know, there needs to be a redistribution of wealth. The people at the moment, we've got about 8 or 10 families who own about 97 to 98% of the world's wealth and the world's money. They hold it all. You know, and even with $1 billion, if you've got $1 billion, you're unlikely to be able to spend that $1 billion in your lifetime. So what do they need all this money for? You know, the rest of us are fighting over the scraps, over the other 3%. We need a complete redistribution of wealth is what needs to happen. You know, the gold standard, I mean, like I said, money just exists for people to have value, something of value to pass around to each other. If the people that are running the world really cared about everything, they would cancel all debt right away, straight away, bang, put everything back to zero, give everybody their money for passing go, and start again. That's the way we should do it.
A jubilee, yes. I think it was on South Park, that kind of adult cartoon on Comedy Central, where I think it was Kenny, the guy that doesn't speak and he's got the hoodie on. He wrote a check for the world's debt and canceled it. That was it.
That's all you need to do. See, it's all fictional anyway. If the World Bank says that your country owes them, you know, $10 million or whatever, mint a coin, write $10 million on it and give it to the World Bank. There you go. Debt's paid. You're the government. Right. You can do that.
Right. Right. So really, this whole global currency revaluation just seems like a pie in the sky. Why, if they're controlling the money, why would they want to empower a bunch of other people that will work against them? That doesn't seem good for their business.
Yeah, the money revaluation is just a trick way of them saying they're about to steal any wealth that everybody's got and call it a reset, you know. Sorry, you had to lose. We're okay, we're good, we'll make sure you're looked after, but you had to lose for now. It's rubbish. It's a pie in the sky. The bankers who control things know exactly what they're doing. They've led the world to where it is, and all of this stuff is designed to further transfer wealth into their hands. That's what it's all about. You know, the whole perception of ownership, you know, like I've talked about, you can't really own the earth. The earth owns you. You're only here for a little while, here for 50, 100 years, whatever. Do the math. You don't own shit. The earth owns you. So it's tricking people into believing that they can own the earth and they can own things, and then tricking them into believing that money is real. You know, that way you can get me paying to live on, you know, I've got to pay to be alive on a piece of the earth. And you can keep raising the bills, and when I can't pay for it, you can take this piece of the earth that I'm on and you can now claim that you own it. And the only reason you can do that is because I believed I could own it in the first place. When I can't, it's the earth, you know. So the whole thing's a scam. You can't own the earth, you know. You look at the Vedic way of life and the kin domains and the way people just used to live and find the place they wanted to be where they were energetically comfortable being. I mean, this is the way we should be living. You know, we should be living in far different societies to what we have now. And there is no remedy that's ever going to be found within any aspect of this system we've got. Certainly not any so-called financial reset. The whole thing's a scam.
So are cryptocurrencies the answer, or is that just another level of the trap?
It's another level of the trap because it's digital. I mean, So the thing with the smart system, the digital system that's coming online, social crediting, it doesn't matter how much crypto you've got in the bank. If your purchasing power is determined by your social credit scores, it doesn't matter how much. You can have $1 trillion in cryptocurrency, and if you walk into a shop and you're not qualified to purchase an airline ticket or whatever, simply because of what you've posted on Facebook, it doesn't matter how much cryptocurrency you've got. It's all digital anyway, you know?
I suggest we're going to move into a gold currency.
We could do. The only thing that's good about cryptos at the moment, really, what's good about cryptocurrency is the fact that you can have a crypto wallet on your computer. You can transfer all your money out of the bank and keep it in your own crypto wallet, so therefore you're not empowering the bank. And then if you want to spend anything, you can use something like Living Room of Satoshi or whatever, Lightbit, whatever. You can transfer it into real money, into fair currency, and then go and buy stuff with cash. So you can be your own bank with cryptocurrency. But spending digital cryptocurrency is no different to using a credit.
Okay, Max, thank you so much for your time. We're at the end of the show. I really
look forward to it. And there's the break.
What's that?
There's the break. We are at the end of the show.
Okay. All right. So we're off the air.
Welcome to Revolution Radio. You, the
Max, thank you very much. Can you still hear me?
I can. Revolution Radio. It was lovely to talk to you, man.
I really appreciate it.